Now, the only independent news talk network in the Middle East, Israel National Radio, presents The Tobias Singer Show. Here's Tobias Singer!
All right, Singer here, Israel National Radio. Joining me right now, Aaron Klein, Jerusalem Bureau Chief, WorldNetDaily.com, author of the book Schmoozing with the Terrorists. Aaron, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Tobia.
A sad day in the Holy Land. A father of three killed and murdered by Hamas in a mortar attack landed in his kibbutz, the kibbutz Nirim. Before we even get to Olmert, are you seeing any signs at all? There's been a lot of talk about the IDF finally going into Gaza Strip with a major military attack. Do you see any of that happening?
It's certainly needed, and I think that overall, there are so many things. We have to take a step back right now to answer that question and look at the political landscape in Israel, look at the political landscape in the United States, in order to understand whether Israel even has the political capital and whether Prime Minister Ehud Olmert even has the political ability to go into Gaza. We know that right now in Israel, although Olmert's in Washington, but in Israel, Olmert is facing what is being described as a very serious investigation. Although, who knows at this point whether he's going to go or not, but the investigation is being described as serious. And so in order for Omar to really appease the left, in order for him to appease his labor constituency and coalition partners and the attorney general's office, we see the direction that Omar's going, and that is fierce negotiations with the Palestinians, because if Omar's to remain in office, he needs to remain relevant to the left. It's these indirect negotiations with Syria, with the Syrian regime, which is in a military alliance with Iran and supporting Hezbollah and Hamas, now getting rockets and weapons from Russia. So Omar's talking to them to apparently give up the Golan Heights, or talking about the Golan Heights, which is strategic territory that looks down on Israeli population centers. So if you look at the direction that the Omar government is headed, it doesn't really look like it's in the direction of confrontation or of some sort of military operation in Gaza. And then you look at Omar in Washington yesterday and today, and the conversation, the dialogue it really seems to be all about Iran. Obama essentially has the nomination. The Democrats are very likely going to get into office in come November for the November elections. And so I think that President Bush understands, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert understands, that if something is going to be done about Iran, there's a very small window of opportunity to do that. So we have to put all of this into perspective. Is there going to be a military operation against Iran? Certainly the timetable for the possibility of such an operation is very limited. At the same time, Olmert is continuing ahead with these negotiations with Syria and the Palestinians. So in light of all this, it can really go either way, and it's really difficult to understand and to really answer whether there's finally going to be a military operation in Gaza. There needs to be. It's absolutely necessary for Israel to go in and clean out the strongholds in order to stop the Hamas terrorist rocket campaign. But it's a very complicated situation right now, and I would say that unfortunately the situation is such that it doesn't really support a military operation in Gaza.
Now, Aaron, I don't know that anything Olmert can do at this stage could save his coalition, could save his government, could save him from becoming a private citizen in the state of Israel. I don't know that. I don't think it's possible, but anything is possible. He does have several lies. But that said, it appears to me, And correct me if I'm wrong, if he really wanted to take his best shot at saving his job, it appears to me that if right now, I mean, he certainly has reason to do it, if right now he would, you know, gather his military leadership, send a full-scale attack into Gaza, I don't think the country would necessarily forgive him, but it would sure go a long way to sort of rallying some support for himself. It seems preposterous that he would think that the average Israeli would get behind him for giving away or suggesting to give away the Golan Heights. I think the average Israeli might rethink, reevaluate their opinion of him if he actually went into Gaza. I mean, doesn't he have this backwards?
Oh, no, no, no. It's absolutely right that in a real democracy, if Omar wanted to and had the answer to the people, then he would absolutely be maybe going into Gaza, but certainly not negotiating with Syria, not negotiating with the Palestinians. The Israeli public, a poll was conducted by Channel 2 just a week and a half ago, 71% of Israelis do not want to give up any part of the Golan Heights. But you're assuming too much, because this place is, unfortunately, we're not talking here about a real democracy where the people are going to decide. Omar here, he doesn't need to appease the people. He's not facing popular election. He needs to appease the media. He needs to appease his leftist coalition in the Knesset. He needs to appease the Attorney General's office, which, as we've seen throughout recent history, is certainly very persuaded by the left, by the liberal aspect. So we're not talking here about having to appease the population, but more of the extreme leftists in positions of power in Israel, and that's his power base. His power base is not Likud. It's not Bibi. It's not the National Religious Coalition that he needs to appease. It's the left. It's Labor. It's those in Kadima and Meretz. In the editorial pages of Yedioth Ahronot and Channel 2 and Channel 10 that shape the public perception of Omar and of the investigation, and who absolutely want to so-called peace with Syria, they want a Palestinian state. These are the people that Omar is playing to, and these are not people who would support any sustained military operation in Gaza. But suddenly, as soon as Omar talks peace with Syria, you see the headlines change in Haaretz and Yedioth and Channel 2. Suddenly, as soon as the talk of indirect negotiations with Syria were released, I don't know if you noticed this, but that's when the Attorney General's office and the police started leaking reports to the media that an indictment of Prime Minister Ehud Olmert would take a long time. This was before he talked about peace with Syria and negotiating so quickly with the Palestinians. The leaks coming out of the police, coming out of the Attorney General, were all about bringing Omar down. They were all about how serious the investigation was. And then as soon as peace with Syria is on the table, then we have the different story. The indictment would take a long time. Things are a little different. I don't believe Omar is, I don't think anything can save him, except perhaps a war with Iran, perhaps an emergency situation. Other than that, he's probably a goner. But you notice already the change in attitude coming out of the police and out of the leftist establishment now that Omar's talking peace with Syria. So bottom line, he doesn't need to appease the people. This is not a real, unfortunately, it doesn't work like that in Israel. He needs to appease the extreme leftists.
51-year-old Amon Rosenberg is dead. Three children have no father. What you're suggesting, and I think you're right, is that his life means nothing in this whole scheme?
No. If it meant anything, then it wouldn't have come to this situation in the first place, that he would have been murdered by Hamas terrorists who fired mortars into this kibbutz. This situation has been such for years now. And instead of doing anything about it, the only thing that Israel has really been doing is appeasing. I can tell you that I just called to several people in Hamas about a different story just literally a few minutes ago before we got on the phone about a story on Obama. Normally, whenever there is a Palestinian attack that is deadly from Gaza into the nearby Jewish communities, immediately all the terrorists, they switch off their phones because they're afraid of anti-terror operations from Israel, and Israel uses their cell phone signal to track the terrorists. But I just called several terrorists. Their phones are open. They are not afraid. They are walking around more emboldened than ever in the Gaza Strip. Israel really hasn't done much of anything there the last few days, the last few weeks. So the terrorists know that these operations, that these terrorist attacks are working. They're working to scare Sderot. They're working to scare the Israeli government into appeasement. I'm sure you heard that just about a week and a half ago, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, which is Fatah's military wing, the U.S. State Department declared terrorist organization, tried to attack the Kerem Shalom and Karni crossing area, the Israel-Gaza crossing area, and also at Erez, the Erez crossing area. And in response to this Palestinian terrorism, what was Israel's response? Their response, get this, was to evacuate their soldiers from the Erez crossing. So in other words, Palestinians attack, they failed in their attack though, and Israel's heavy, mighty response is to retreat, to pull its troops out of Erez. The terrorists see that as emboldenment, and this is why you now have a Jew who died today. You have a Jew who died today because Israel's not doing anything to stop it.
If you're just tuning in, my guest, Aaron Klein, Jerusalem Bureau Chief, WorldNetDaily.com, one of the largest news services on the Internet, contributing author to the G2 report, which is a premium intelligence report available only on WorldNetDaily.com, and also author of a book that's come out fairly recently, and it's skyrocketing on Amazon. It's called Schmoozing with the Terrorists, and it, essentially the record and interaction of my guest, Aaron Klein, with terrorists, the most notorious terrorists in Hamas and Islamic Jihad and Fatah. And Aaron Klein is here with us. And, you know, we're told each and every day by groups like Peace Now and others that the obstacle to peace is Israel's occupation of land that Israel had liberated in the 67 war. And I think a point needs to be made here. Kibbutz Nirim is within the Green Line. Kibbutz, they're not bombing Hebron. They're not bombing Beth El, Tekoa. They're bombing areas that Israel was in control in before 67. I mean, the message is clear from Hamas. It's the whole state. I'm reading that. I mean,
anybody who disagrees should just read my book. Listen to what the terrorists have to say. Whenever they fire these rockets, they make these pronouncements that they're going to fire until they liberate Sderot. That's the term they use, liberate. And then liberate Ashkelon, all pre-1967. Liberate Ashdod. Liberate Haifa. Liberate Jerusalem. Liberate Tel Aviv. This is what they're fighting for. When Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the little man in Iran, makes these statements about wiping Israel off the map, he's not saying we're going to wipe the West Bank, Israel's Jewish communities in the West Bank, the settlements off the map. He's not saying that we're going to wipe Eastern Jerusalem off the map. He's saying we are going to wipe Israel off the map. That this is the war that the Arabs have been fighting for generations now, even before Israel recaptured eastern sections of Jerusalem, recaptured Judea and Samaria. And so anybody who's fooled by this, and now, after the Oslo Accords failed, after you can listen to any Arab leader on the street talk about destroying Israel, not the post-1967 areas, you know, at this point it's just ridiculous. If you still don't believe it, just listen to what any terrorist has to say. And that's why I talk to terrorists, because a lot of people criticize me for talking with them. I talk to them because they tell the truth, unlike Omar or unlike some English-speaking Arabs who know how to play both sides. The terrorists, just ask them what they're doing, what they're fighting for, and they'll tell you. They're fighting to get the Jews out of the Middle East, and that's just a stepping stone toward their ultimate goal, which is spreading Islam around the world.
Ehud Olmert, seeking to save his job in spite of the fact that folks, Jews living within the Green Line, are under attack, daily rocket mortar assaults against Negev area communities and areas along the Mediterranean coastal areas like Ashkelon and so on. And instead, to save his job, he's negotiating talking peace with Syria that has demanded that the Jewish state retreat back to the pre-67 line. That means all of Golan Heights given back to Syria. You were reporting, Aaron, that as Syria is talking peace with the Olmert administration, with Israel, it is furiously acquiring missiles. What's happening in Damascus?
Yeah, anybody who believes in peace with Syria, just look at what they're doing. I talked with security officials, and not just Israeli, but others, the Egyptian, Jordanian, that are affirming that with the help of Iran, what Syria is doing right now, literally just in the last few weeks, and this is after the indirect negotiations between Israel and Syria through Turkey were announced, Syria is acquiring as many Russian missiles and rockets as possible, including, very dangerously, laser-guided missiles. That we're talking about Scud-D missiles and another kind of missile called the Iskander missile, which has ranges that place all of Israel under its range. Anyway, Syria has always had rockets and missiles that can reach any part of Israel, but now these are laser-guided. These can target. These are very dangerous, and Syria is furiously arming itself, and they're doing it, apparently, with the aid from Iran. So here we have Omar talking to Syria, but we see that they're in a direct, very direct military relationship with Iran, and without even any preconditions, Omar's in these talks. He didn't ask first for Syria to even put on the table giving up its alliances with Iran, with Hezbollah, with Hamas, with the Islamic Jihad. And I'm told that from multiple security officials that even if Bashar Assad, let's say he really wanted peace with Israel, which I seriously doubt, but let's say he really did, really wanted to come to the Knesset and join with the Jews and hug and kiss, and everything would all be fine, and there would be peace, and there would be business between Jews and Syrians. Even if he really wanted this, he couldn't do it because the Syrian military is controlled on all levels by Iran. Iranian Revolutionary Guard units run the Syrian military. So if Assad actually tried to break his alliance with Iran, if he actually really wanted to make peace with Syria, with Israel, which obviously, again, I seriously doubt, he couldn't. He can't do that. He doesn't have a military. He would be overthrown. So for him to even talk to Syria, what this is doing now is not only emboldening Syria, but it opened the doors, it opened the floodgates for the Europeans to now kiss and hug Bashar Assad. Bashar Assad has been invited to France, and he's going to go there next in about 2 weeks. He's now in direct communication with European leaders who are calling him. Why? Because Israel's talking with Syria. So people might think that, oh, you know, it's harmless. Nothing is going to ultimately come. Israel won't give up the Golan. Omar will be out of power. No damage really was done. No, major damage was done. Syria now has an open door to European officials, and it'll only be a matter of time before it will be difficult for America and for the international community to continue to try to isolate Syria. So Omar opened the door. Now Syria is very happy, and Israel gets nothing in return.
Aaron, you know, we're coming to a news break. I want to keep you on. When we come back after the news, Aaron, I want to talk to you about the United States, which regards Syria. The State Department lists Syria as a country that supports and sponsors terror. Barack Obama has apparently locked up the Democratic nomination, and he's going to be running against McCain. I didn't say it when you mentioned this point, but I know that many of the listeners guessed a moment ago when you suggested that Barack Obama, in all likelihood, come November, is going to win the presidency, and he's going to be walking down the street on January 21st, making his speech, accepting he'll be the next president of the United States. What does that mean for Israel? That and more. Aaron Klein, Jerusalem Bureau Chief, WorldNetDaily.com. When we come back, the United States, Barack Obama, the future for Israel, don't touch the dial. Ain't none a number.
זוכרנו את ציון, וזוכרנו את ציון עם מקדשנו. על נהרות בבל, שם ישבנו גם בחינו, וזוכרנו את ציון, וזוכרנו את ציון עם מקדשנו.
To do with him. Anti-Semites hate his guts. They would give anything to get him off the radio. Tovia Singer. Coming up next on Israel National Radio.
All right, we are back. Singer here, Israel National Radio. My guest, Aaron Klein, Jerusalem Bureau Chief, World Net Daily. .com. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Tovia.
The United States could be very proud. We're going to talk about the U.S. and Obama. Obama taking the knot. You made a comment that I think caught a number of people by surprise. We're going to discuss that comment about your prediction of who would win the president, would win the office, the executive branch. But your report, just as long as we're crossing west 6,000 miles, the United States is training terrorists in Jericho in the art of using weaponry. What's going on?
You know, this is unbelievable. Since the 1990s, and I've discussed it on your program several times, but there's a new twist. I'll get to that. But since the late 1990s and after the signing of the Oslo Accords, but a few years later, America opened up training bases. This is very open. It's not that maybe these exist. They opened up training bases in the West Bank, particularly in a city called Jericho, and then later also in Jordan and in Egypt, where they train, where they arm, where they finance Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah security forces. Back then, of course, it was Yasser Arafat's security forces. And so, in order to build up the Palestinian so-called moderate Fatah, for years America has been literally running training bases for Fatah security forces. The only problem with this, as we've discussed multiple times on your show, is that terrorists are openly members of the Fatah security forces, members of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade terrorist organization, the declared military wing of Abbas's Fatah party. These are the terrorists that have carried out every suicide bombing in Israel since 2005, shooting attacks, rocket attacks. They're actually the most active Palestinian terror group. Most of them, literally most of them, are openly members of Fatah's security forces that have received American training, to the point where the chief of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade in Nablus, his name is Ala Sanakra, the chief of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade in Ramallah, his name is Kamal Ranam, I know both of them, the chief of the brigades in Jenin, the chief of the brigades in multiple West Bank cities, they all are members of Fatah's security forces, and they all received American training. And then they took their weapons and their training, and they killed Jews. But this was back then. Now, things are supposed to be different. America, just a few months ago, they started building up this new advanced Palestinian Authority police force that has about 600 units in each training course. And what we're doing, what America's doing with your taxpayer dollars, with my taxpayer dollars, is we're training the Palestinian police forces, and it's supposed to be the most professional Palestinian police force ever. They're undergoing extremely advanced training, and this is the force that is supposed to take over the areas that Israel is going to eventually attempt to evacuate in Judea and Samaria. And so we started these brand new training courses a few months ago, and it was announced, reported everywhere, that this is being financed by America, and that, get this, America, Israel, and the Palestinian Authority are all going to review the candidates of all the training courses, every single candidate, in other words, to get the new training. You need to be approved by Israel, approved by America, and approved, which is not too hard, by the Palestinian Authority, to ensure that there are no terrorists in this training course. This is what Congress was told. This is what the Senate was told. This is why the funding came in for these courses. Well, I come, and as you know, I know a few terrorists, and so I did a little digging. It didn't take too much. And I found that there are at least four well-known members of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, terrorists from Ramallah, that are currently, as we speak, right now, receiving this advanced American training in Jericho that was not supposed to have any terrorists inside. And just to confirm here, because for various reasons I didn't put out the names of the four terrorists in the American training, but now I'm going to put out a name of a very senior terrorist. His name is Abdullah Kamel. He is one of the chiefs of the Al-Aqsa. I'm sorry, his name is Mohammed Kataki. I confused you. His name is Mohammed Kataki. He's one of the chiefs of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade in Shechem, and he was accepted to receive American training. So get this, a well-known Al-Aqsa terrorist, again, his name is Mohammed Kataki. If America is listening right now, if the CIA gets a hold of this recording, look up the name Mohammed Kataki, because you guys in America, in Israel, in the Palestinian Authority approved him in your new training courses, and he's a senior member of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade that has carried out multiple suicide bombings. Bottom line, we're training terrorists.
Yeah, and for those of you wondering about the origins of the name Kataki, I don't think his parents named him after a sushi roll. Just an important note here, Aaron. There are some folks who are listening to this who may be wondering, well, perhaps the United States is not aware of the fact that Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade is a terror organization, or it doesn't regard them as a terror organization. The State Department, which is not the most pro-Israel agency in American government, lists Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade as a terror organization. I'm right here. Is that correct?
It has to, actually. I mean, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade is literally, they are the most active Palestinian terrorists in Judea and Samaria. They are the ones carrying out the vast majority of all terrorist attacks against Israel. Even from Gaza, just a week and a half ago, it was the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, not Hamas, the Al-Aqsa Brigade that tried to attack the Erez Shalom, the Erez Crossing. The brigades, multiple shooting attacks, thousands of rocket attacks. But if this was back in the 1990s and we didn't know any better, and yeah, we were training Fatah, and you can say Fatah, Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, the brigades was really just forming back then. That's one thing. That was then. This is now. The brigades are well-known terrorists, and yet we haven't done anything to stop the fact that the Fatah security forces that America coordinates security with, that we fund, that we train, that we arm, that Fatah and Al-Aqsa, they're the same thing. It's absurd that we can say Fatah is moderate, and yet this moderate Fatah has a military wing that happens to carry out most of the terrorist attacks against Israel, and we don't differentiate. Just case in point, about a year and a half ago, Mahmoud Abbas appointed as the chief of 417, which is the most important Palestinian security force. They are the presidential guard units. They're the police. He appointed as 417 a guy named Mohammed Damra, who was one of the senior commanders of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, a well-known brigade terrorist, was just appointed the chief of a group that is supposed to conquer terrorism. And he was actually number two on Israel's most wanted list of terrorists. Something is wrong there. I mean, something is very wrong when I can tell you for a fact that many open leaders of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade walk around carrying American assault rifles. They received American training. We need to stop this. I mean, again, if this was the 1990s, even then there's no excuse. But, okay, we didn't know any better. Al-Aqsa Brigade is just forming. Now we know better, and yet we continue. And I think it's just beyond the pale. In the midst of the war on terrorism, our declared war against Islamofascism, we are handing weapons, training, and money to terrorists.
You know, the knee-jerk reaction, Aaron, is to get really angry at Bush, to get really angry at the White House. How could they possibly have allowed this to go on? How could they allow senior military officials, American experts in weaponry, the kind of stuff that's used against Israeli citizens? But really, if Israel has to sign off on this, and as you said, that was the part of the deal that sweetened it for American lawmakers to enable this program to go ahead. If Israel is the one who's also checking this through, it boggles the mind how the Jewish state would not see this. I understand why Condoleezza Rice might not want folks to notice this, but Israeli officials, that's really stunning.
Israel, which helped bring Yasser Arafat back from Tunis, back from exile to Judea and Samaria, that Israel, the Israel that negotiates with Mahmoud Abbas, while his Fatah school system and Fatah media calls for the destruction of the Jewish state, that Israel. So I don't think it's so stunning. And I want to spend a minute here because I know we were going to talk about Obama, but I want to read, I just found from my book, Schmoozing with Terrorists, and I want to quote here, this is how important it is. I met with Kamal Ranam, who is the chief of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade in Ramallah. He is also one of the senior commanders of Preventative Security Services, which is American-trained, American-backed, American-armed. So in other words, the chief of the Al-Aqsa Brigades in Ramallah, Kamal Ranam, he's walking around with an American assault rifle. And I asked him to describe to me, and I'm quoting him here, I asked him to describe to me, he's also known as Abu Yusuf, to describe to me how the American training helped him kill Jews. And again, you're about to hear from a terrorist, chief of the Al-Aqsa Brigades, how we helped him kill Jews. I'm quoting him here. He said, "All the methods and the techniques that we studied in these trainings," meaning these American trainings, "we applied them against the Israelis. We sniped at Israeli settlers and soldiers. We broke into settlements and Israeli army bases and posts. We collected information on the movements of soldiers and settlers. We collected information about the best timing to infiltrate our bombers into Israel. We used weapons and we produced explosives. And of course, the trainings we received from the Americans and from the Europeans was a great help to us." Again, this is the chief of one of the most the most active terrorist organization explaining to me how the American training helped him. And then he went on to say later that if it weren't for the American training, I do not think that our resistance during the period of 2000 Intifada would have been as successful as it was. So American training was key to the success in killing Jews.
I want to just for a moment speak to Israeli citizens. You know, you're pretty good at producing advanced technology in the area of Intel chips and cellular phone technology and Celeron technology. When it comes to voting, choosing leaders, you're a very stupid nation. Enough said about my kinfolks here in the state of Israel. they can't pick leaders. It's astonishing. Let's talk about what Americans can do, what Americans might do this November. It's clear now that Barack Obama is the Democratic nominee. At some point, Hillary, she's backing out of this whole thing. You suggested, I'm tempted to go in so many directions here. You suggested before we went to the news break, that Barack Obama is likely to be the next president of the United States. We all know that the consequences could be staggering, because John McCain might put together a whole group of folks around him, advisors, that might be very supportive of Israel. Given the kind of individuals that have been endorsing, supporting, nourishing, standing behind Barack Obama, that's not likely. Why do you think Barack Obama is going to do so well?
I think Americans are blinded by Barack Obama. I really haven't seen such a messianic fervor, such excitement over a presidential candidate since I wasn't alive back then, but since at least studying the ascension to power of John F. Kennedy. Even Hamas has compared Barack Obama to John Kennedy. I think that he's going to sweep this nomination. Americans are fooled by his bumper sticker campaign of hope and change and change and hope and change. And that's about it, hope and change. Not too many specifics. But let me tell you, and listeners, take note, American Jews are very important in this election. Why do you think Barack Obama just got the nomination pretty much on Tuesday? On Wednesday, about 17, 18 hours later, his first policy speech is where? In front of AIPAC, in front of Jews, in front of the Israel lobby. Why? Why would he do such a thing? It's because, actually, Jews can really be crucial. You have states that are normally a Democrat, but that Jews in Florida in particular, but also in New York and Pennsylvania, they vote in very important blocks, and they could turn the tide of Florida. They could, and Florida could be key. This is why I'm focusing on Florida. This is why Barack Obama was in Boca Raton, Florida 2 weeks ago in a shul, actually responding directly to my articles about him. It's because he understands that Florida is crucial, that Jews there, who would normally always vote Democrat, but suddenly a lot of the articles that I'm doing and that also others are doing, Republican Jewish Coalition has taken out ads in the newspapers, literally quoting my articles and others, it's starting to turn a little. Suddenly the Jews in Florida, according to polls, who normally would have voted for Hillary Clinton, suddenly they might not vote for Obama because they think, they hear that Hamas supported Obama, they hear his advisors are anti-Israel, and they're nervous. So I think he's going to win. I do think eventually he's going to win, but I think that Jews can play the most crucial part in this election, in Florida in particular, and that's why Obama and McCain are fighting for the Jewish vote.
Do you think, and I'm just suggesting this here, is it possible, Aaron, because I know that there are a whole bunch of listeners around the world whose forehead sort of just got crunched listening to that. Is it possible that the primary campaign, which has essentially come to a close yesterday, was a beauty contest? Hillary has very strong negatives. Barack Obama is an enormously charismatic, very intelligent fellow, and certainly comes across as much more sincere than his opponent. But this was kind of like a fashion show. It wasn't serious. Do you think that now that you have John McCain and Barack Obama, I mean, two ends of the political spectrum, I mean, these are just two different worldviews that, in fact, the issues of all those who've endorsed him, from Fidel Castro to leaders of Hamas to Louis Farrakhan, do you think that Americans now will sort of tune in a cerebral way, use their frontal lobe a little more successfully to realize what Barack Obama is and what kind of a danger he poses?
You know, I think that's not so much up to Americans as it is up to the American media, because if anybody wants to do their own investigating, it's very open, easy to see who Obama is and to see. I just put out an article 2 days ago that went nuts about how Obama is very tied to the Nation of Islam. And some of this stuff is picked up by the mainstream American media, but a lot isn't. And so there are a lot of Americans out there that are just not educated. They're making a decision based on Obama's bumper sticker campaign and also based on a lot of the coverage they get from these Obama lovers in the media that, God forbid, so they ever report something negative about Barack Obama, and not just negative, but accurate about Barack Obama, ABC, NBC, CBS, they are all fawning over Obama. So I think information is key, and getting information out, and I'm not talking about slander, I'm not talking about smears, getting real information out about Barack Obama, because there are very legitimate questions that need to be answered. Does he have a relationship with the Nation of Islam? Certainly a lot of his advisors and his church and his own campaign staff, they do. What are his views on Israel? For real, he's saying one thing, but he said something different back before he was a presidential candidate. His advisors say something different. What are his views? And so there are a lot of really important questions. What does he think of Hamas? Does he think, does he want to end their isolation? Now he's claiming they're a terror group before he said something different. So I think that it comes down to information, and this is why talk radio is so important. This is why WorldNet Daily is so important. This is why even cable news networks, are at least one or two of them, are really important, because they're getting out accurate information. So will Americans think with their frontal lobe? I hope so. Will the American media give Americans the information they deserve about the possible future president of the United States? Very doubtful.
I have one feeling. I remember, and we only have 30 seconds, but I remember in Spain when they were going to elections, immediately, like 48 hours before the elections, there was a bombing in Madrid, and it turned the citizens of Spain to vote for a left-wing government. My sense is, and there's no way to know this with certainty, but my sense is that, God forbid, a terror attack on American soil between now and November will turn the tide against Obama and for McCain. Maybe that's wishful thinking. I pray that that scenario will never occur. Aaron Klein, Jerusalem Bureau Chief, WorldNetDaily.com. Thank you so much for joining us right here on Israel. Hey, great having you on. And to all the listeners, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom and a very happy Shavuot. I've been looking for the call of the ID.